Chapter 26. Feeling tired, and having nothing more to do till the train left, Jude sat down on one of the sofas. At the back of the barmaid's rows bevel-etched mirrors, with glass shelves running along their front, on which stood precious liquids that Jude did not know the name of, and bottles of topaz, sapphire, ruby and amethyst. The moment was enlivened by the entrance of some customers into the next compartment, and the starting of the mechanical telltale of monies received, which emitted a ting-ting every time a coin was put in. The barmaid attending to this compartment was invisible to Jude's direct glance, though a reflection of her back in the glass behind her was occasionally caught by his eyes. He had only observed this listlessly when she turned her face for a moment to the glass to set her hair tidy. Then he was amazed to discover that the face was Arabella's. If as he had come onto his compartment she would have seen him. But she did not, this being presided over by the maiden on the other side. Abby was in a black gown, with white linen cuffs and a broad white collar, and her figure, more developed than formerly, was accentuated by a bunch of daffodils that she wore on her left bosom. In the compartment she served, stood an electroplated fountain of water over a spirit lamp, whose blue flame sent a steam from the top, all this being visible to him only in the mirror behind her, which also reflected the faces of the men she was attending to, one of them a handsome, dissipated young fellow, possibly an undergraduate, who had been relating to her an experience of some humorous sort. "Oh, Mr. Cockman, now, how can you tell such a tale to me in my innocence?" she cried gaily. "Mr. Cockman, what do you use to make your mustache curl so beautiful?" As the young man was clean-shaven, the retort provoked a laugh at his expense. "Come," said he, "I'll have a curacao, and a light, please." She served the liqueur from one of the lovely bottles and, striking a match, held it to his cigarette with ministering archness while he whiffed. "Well, have you heard from your husband lately, my dear?" he asked. "Not a sound," said she. "Where is he?" "I left him in Australia, and I suppose he's there still." Jude's eyes grew rounder. "What made you part from him?" "Don't you ask questions, and you won't hear lies. Come then, give me my change, which you've been keeping from me for the last quarter of an hour, and I'll romantically vanish up the street of this picturesque city." She handed the change over the counter, in taking which he caught her fingers and held them. There was a slight struggle and titter, and he bade her goodbye and left. Jude had looked on with the eye of a dazed philosopher. It was extraordinary how far removed from his life Arabella now seemed to be. He could not realize their nominal closeness. And, this being the case, in his present frame of mind he was indifferent to the fact that Arabella was his wife indeed. The compartment that she served emptied itself of visitors, and after a brief thought he entered it and went forward to the counter. Arabella did not recognize him for a moment. Then their glances met. She started, till a humorous impudence sparkled in her eyes, and she spoke. "Well, I'm blessed. I thought you were underground years ago." "Oh, I never heard anything of you, or I don't know that I should have come here. But never mind. What shall I treat you to this afternoon? A scotch and soda? Come, anything that the house will afford, for old acquaintance sake." "Thanks, Arabella," said Jude without a smile. "But I don't want anything more than I've had." The fact was that her unexpected presence there had destroyed at a stroke his momentary taste for strong liquor as completely as if it had whisked him back to his milk-fed infancy. "That's a pity, now you could get it for nothing. How long have you been here?"
"About 6 weeks. I returned from Sydney 3 months ago. I always liked this business, you know. I wonder you came to this place." "Well, as I say, I thought you were gone to glory, and being in London I saw the situation in an advertisement. Nobody was likely to know me here, even if I had minded, for I was never in Christminster in my growing up."
"Why did you return from Australia?"
"Oh, I had my reasons. Then you are not a don yet?
No.
Not even a reverend?
No.
Nor so much as a rather reverend dissenting gentleman?
I am as I was.
True, you look so. She idly allowed her fingers to rest on the pull of the beer engine as she inspected them critically. He observed that her hands were smaller and whiter than when he had lived with her, and that on the hand which pulled the engine she wore an ornamental ring set with what seemed to be real sapphires, which they were, indeed, and were much admired as such by the young men who frequented the bar. So you pass as having a living husband, he continued.
Yes. I thought it might be awkward if I called myself a widow, as I should have liked.
True. I am known here a little. I didn't mean on that account, for as I said, I didn't expect you. It was for other reasons.
What were they?
I don't care to go into them, she replied evasively. I make a very good living, and I don't know that I want your company.
Here a chappie with no chin, and a mustache like a lady's eyebrow, came and asked for a curiously compounded drink, and Arabella was obliged to go and attend to him.
He can't talk here, she said, stepping back a moment.
And you wait till 9?
Say yes, and don't be a fool. I can get off duty 2 hours sooner than usual, if I ask. I am not living in the house at present.
He reflected and said gloomily, I'll come back. I suppose we'd better arrange something.
Oh, bother arranging.
I'm not going to arrange anything.
But I must know a thing or two, and, as you say, we can't talk here.
Very well, I'll call for you.
Depositing his unemptied glass, he went out and walked up and down the street. Here was a rude flounce into the pellucid sentimentality of his sad attachment to Sue. Though Arabella's word was absolutely untrustworthy, he thought there might be some truth in her implication, that as he had not wished to disturb him, and had really supposed him dead. However, there was only one thing now to be done, and that was to play a straightforward part, the law being the law, and the woman between whom and himself there was no more unity than between East and West being in the eye of the church one person with him. Having to meet Arabella here, it was impossible to meet Sue at Alfredston as he had promised. At every thought of this, a pang had gone through him, but the conjuncture could not be helped. Arabella was perhaps an intended intervention to punish him for his unauthorized love. Passing the evening, therefore, in a desultory waiting about the town wherein he avoided the precincts of every cloister and hall, because he could not bear to behold them, he repaired to the tavern bar, while the 101 strokes were resounding from the great bell of Cardinal College, a coincidence which seemed to him gratuitous irony. The inn was now brilliantly lighted up, and the scene was altogether more brisk and gay. The faces of the barmaidens had risen in color, each having a pink flush on her cheek. Their manners were still more vivacious than before, more abandoned, more excited, more sensuous, and they expressed their sentiments and desires less euphemistically, laughing in a lackadaisical tone, without reserve. The bar had been crowded with men of all sorts during the previous hour, and he had heard from without the hubbub of their voices, but the customers were fewer at last. He nodded to Arabella, and told her that she would find him outside the door when she came away. But you must have something with me first, she said with great good humor. Just an early nightcap. I always do. Then you can go out and wait a minute, as it is best we should not be seen going together. She drew a couple of liqueur glasses of brandy, and though as he had evidently, from her countenance, already taken in enough alcohol either by drinking, or, more probably, from the atmosphere as he had breathed for so many hours, she finished hers quickly. He also drank his, and went outside the house. In a few minutes she came, in a thick jacket and a hat with a black feather. "I'll live quite near," she said, taking his arm, "and can let myself in by a latch key at any time. What arrangement do you want to come to?" "Oh, none in particular," he answered, thoroughly sick and tired, his thoughts again reverting to Alfredston, and the train he did not go by, The probable disappointment of Sue that he was not there when she arrived, and the missed pleasure of her company on the long and lonely climb by starlight up the hills to Marygreen. Ought to have gone back, really. My aunt is on her deathbed, I fear. I'll go over with you tomorrow morning. I think I could get a day off. There was something particularly uncongenial in the idea of Arabella, who had no more sympathy than a tigress with his relations or him, coming to the bedside of his dying aunt and meeting Sue. Yet he said, "Of course, if you'd like to, you can. Well, that we'll consider. Now, until we have come to some agreement, it is awkward our being together here where you are known, and I am getting known, though without any suspicion, that I have anything to do with you. As we are going towards the station, suppose we take the 9:40 train to Elbrickham? We shall be there in little more than half an hour, and nobody will know us for one night, and we shall be quite free to act as we choose till we have made up our minds, whether we'll make anything public or not. As you like. Then wait till I get two or three things. This is my lodging. Sometimes when late I sleep at the hotel where I am engaged, so nobody will think anything of my staying out." She speedily returned, and they went on to the railway, and made the half-hour's journey to Elbrickham, where they entered a third rate inn near the station in time for a late supper. On the morrow between 9 and half past they were journeying back to Christminster, the only two occupants of a compartment in a third-class railway carriage. Having, like Jude, made rather a hasty toilet to catch the train, Arabella looked a little frozy, and her face was very far from possessing the animation which had characterized it at the bar the night before. When they came out of the station she found that she still had half an hour to spare before she was due at the bar. They walked in silence a little way out of the town in the direction of Alfredston. Jude looked up the far highway. "Ah! Poor feeble me," he murmured at last. "What?" said she. "This is the very road by which I came into Christminster years ago full of plans. Well, whatever the road is, I think my time is nearly up, as I have to be in the bar by 11 o'clock. And as I said, I shan't ask for the day to go with you to see your aunt. So perhaps we had better part here. I'd sooner not walk up Chief Street with you, since we've come to no conclusion at all." "Very well. But you said when we were getting up this morning that you had something you wished to tell me before I left. So I had two things, one in particular. But you wouldn't promise to keep it a secret. I'll tell you now if you promise. As an honest woman, I wish you to know it. It was what I began telling you in the night about that gentleman who managed the Sydney Hotel." Arabella spoke somewhat hurriedly for her. "You'll keep it close?" "Yes, yes, I promise," said Jude impatiently. "Of course I don't want to reveal your secrets. Whenever I met him out for a walk, he used to say that he was much taken with my looks, and he kept pressing me to marry him. I never thought of coming back to England again, and being out there in Australia, with no home of my own, after leaving my father, I at last agreed, and did."
"What, marry him?"
"Yes."
"Regularly, legally in church?"
"Yes."
"And lived with him till shortly before I left. It was stupid, I know, but I did.
There, now I've told you. Don't round upon me. He talks of coming back to England, poor old chap. But if he does, he won't be likely to find me."
Jude stood pale and fixed. "Why the devil didn't you tell me last night?" he said.
"Well, I didn't. Won't you make it up with me, then? So in talking of your husband to the bar gentleman, you meant him, of course, not me."
Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.